Are you ready to cultivate confident, resilient, and mentally strong dancers? Introducing Lauren Ritchie's Mental Skills Masterclasses, designed to build dancers from the inside out. Join them live and online for a transformative journey where each month, dancers will dive deep into a different mental skill, including confidence, growth mindset, motivation, resilience, and stress regulation. In these engaging one-hour sessions, you will learn, reflect, and practice personalized mental skills, exercises, and techniques that you can immediately apply to your training, performances, and everyday life. This program is perfect for dancers age 12 and above who are committed to growth, curiosity, and community. Dancers can log on individually or as dance teams. And don't worry if the live classes don't align with your schedule, as sessions will be recorded and available online for viewing at your convenience. Visit www.withlauren.ca or follow the link below for more details and grab your information package today.
What you're good at and what you love, that's your passion. Between what you love and what the world needs, that's your mission. Between what the world needs and what you can get paid for is vocation, and what you can be paid for and what you're good at is your profession.
Hello and welcome to The Background Dancer. I'm your host, Jason Yup. Thank you for joining me with our community of passionate dance contributors from around the world and across different fields. In this weekly podcast, I offer educational conversations and insightful tips to help you better understand all things offstage about this curious art form. For this episode, I speak to Jonathan Colleton, Residence Life Program Coordinator at the University of Toronto, Scarborough. Most importantly, he is also the host, editor, and producer of the Career Crossroads podcast. And we talked about the curious case of careers. Hello, Jonathan. Welcome to The Background Dancer. It's so good to see you again after our last episode. Just thank you for being here today.
I appreciate it. Really glad to be here, Jason. It was really nice to talk to you on my podcast. And I was thrilled when you reached out and said you wanted me to come on The Background Dancer. And I'm so curious about how this is going to tie into dance, because as I told you on my podcast, I'm not much of a dancer. I mean, you get a few drinks in me, get me on the dance floor, I'll have a good time, but I'm certainly not a professional.
Well, that is going to be the highlight of today's episode, really, as to how we talk about something that you're really familiar with, which is careers, yeah, with your podcast being Career Crossroads. But just to give a little overview, this episode is quite special because it's going to be part of a little bonus content segment that I will have in order to split the year apart. So I've done 5 months, you know, I'm going to split it and then another 5 months later on. But this is sort of like the bridge to have a little break from all the dancey stuff. And one of the things that I've learned about my podcast really is that apart from it being a dance-related podcast, it's very much a career-oriented podcast as well. You know, mm-hmm. It's all about formulating ideas and plans and introducing sectors and industries that may not have been exposed to a dancer prior to that. So I had to turn to you to talk about career because I have learned so much from Career Crossroads itself, right? And I wanted to see, wow, okay, Jonathan can provide so much value just as a person, firstly, producing the podcast and also talking to all the various guests that are on the podcast. So just to begin things, I would love for you to share with all of us, how exactly did you arrive at your current job or profession? I know you just changed jobs, so go ahead and fill us in.
Yeah, great. So I work at the University of Toronto, Scarborough, which is in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. It's the biggest university in the country. And I've worked at the university for a little over 5 years now. But I did just recently transition into my current job, which is the Residence Life Program Coordinator. And I work in an industry that's called Student Affairs. And student affairs is, I always like to give an overview of it for people because I think it doesn't mean a lot on its own. I don't, you know, if you're not in that world, you don't necessarily, you've not heard that term before. So think about your time at university and think about all of the outside of the classroom experiences and support opportunities, everything like health and wellness, academic advising, student life, or where I currently work, residence life. So I spent about 5 years working in student life up until my recent transition about 5-6 weeks ago into this new res life job. And how I got there is, I think it's a path that many, many people in my own field take, because I don't think anybody goes into a post high school academic program and thinks, I want to work in student affairs in university administration. I don't think it's something that people, when they're like, you know, 10 years old, they aspire to be a university administrator, and only because it's not something you're really familiar with until you get into that atmosphere. So when you show up as a student at a university or college, you start to see all these people around you that sole responsibility is to be there to help you as a student succeed. And so that's kind of how I ended up there. I went to Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, which is about an hour west of Toronto, which is my hometown. And my plan was to be a high school history teacher and be in the Army Reserve in the summers. That was my plan. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go through, get my history degree. I was double majoring in politics, and I thought I could teach history politics. I had great teachers who taught those things when I was a student. And I thought, this is going to be great. I can be part of all the March break trips, taking students to Europe and around the world. And it seemed like a great fit for me. And it did not take very long for me to realize at university that that's not what I wanted to do anymore. And part of that came from the fact that I had always been involved in extracurriculars in high school, and I continued that into university. And I went to a leadership camp that was run by the university about a month before I started my first year. It's called LEAP. And at LEAP, I met someone early on who was the manager or coordinator, I think at the time, of the Student Leadership Center on campus, and they had a history degree. And I think that was the moment where I was like, wait a minute, your degree doesn't have to tie directly to the job that you have. Like it I don't think I had ever really thought much about that before. And so I started getting involved in some of the extracurricular activities, the Student Leadership Center, some clubs, the History Students Association, and Orientation Week, our Students Union, things like that. And I really, really enjoyed some of that stuff. And it occurred to me pretty early on, I think in second year, that politics was not in my future. When I had to take political stats and theory, I was out. I changed that major and I switched from history and politics to history and Canadian studies, which is very niche, but it lined up with some of my interests with Canadian peacekeeping history and stuff like that. And I recognized pretty early on, though, that I probably wasn't going to be a teacher. So while I was studying, these things were more out of interest and out of the necessity to get a degree. But I wanted to work at the university doing the things that all of those staff were doing that were supporting me. And I quickly learned that that was called student affairs. And I realized the best way for me to get into that career was to spend as much time as I could in my undergrad volunteering with those departments, getting jobs with those departments, and getting real practical experience so that when I left university, I could try and get a job with one of the schools in my area or abroad. I was, you know, when you're young, you're less tied down. And so I was like, I could go anywhere, maybe. I don't really know. So yeah, that's how I ended up into student affairs. I graduated and it took me about 8 months and I got my first job at the University of Waterloo working on student transition programs, things like Orientation Week. We had a very similar summer program where students would come and live in residence for a night and see what it was like to prepare them for September. And that led into the next job, and that led to where I am now.
Wow, that is quite fascinating already, and there's so much to unwrap there. One thing I really thank you for mentioning is you talk about career, and the student affairs is something that I myself have been quite affiliated with in my own academy back in Hong Kong. So I work very closely with the student affairs office. And one thing they always had in the student affairs office is an actual job called the career guidance counselor, right? Every university needs to have one. And I believe you acted to some capacity in that manner as a career advisor, career kind of guidance counselor. Is that correct?
Not in a formal setting. However, the job I did for 5 years was working with student clubs, and that was the one I just switched out of recently. And I think, you know, part of the reason I started my podcast was seeing students in these clubs working their hardest in one particular path, and then what if it didn't work out? I could see that they were putting all their eggs in one basket. And I knew from my experience that having a variety of skills that you learn from all these extra things that I look at it as like the last best opportunity to get involved in such a wide variety of groups of people, of ideas of thought. It's a place where everyone has chosen to be to better themselves. And not that people aren't doing that in their working world, but suddenly when you've got 8 hours a day where you're working or more and you've got to drive to and from work, it changes things. When you have 14 or 30,000 students all on one campus, all with a variety of skill sets and perspectives, like utilize all of that and get as much out of that experience as you can. You know, it's not just the in the classroom experience that can benefit you. And so I would see these students involved with clubs. And I think it really kind of came from some students who I know who are applying to medical school. And a few of them asked me to write references. And I wrote what I imagine were hopefully great references, but 5 out of the 7 I've written did not get into medical school. And realizing that these students need to sort of see an alternate path for themselves beyond just medical school was, you know, that's one example. There are many others, I think, of just students helping them realize that the thing that they are in doesn't have to dictate the thing that they will do in 5 years or 10 years. And so I wasn't in any professional capacity, a career advisor, but my job was to work directly with students on the front lines, talk to them about what their club was doing, how that was going to impact their future, and try to help them understand that it was going to open up doors for them in the future and that they weren't, you know, a lot of people, I think their parents influence what major they go into. And we certainly see that a lot at the university I work at. And I think there are some students who are like, I'm in this major because my parents told me to be here, but they didn't necessarily want to be doing that. And just helping them realize that, like, get your education, but think about the other options, things that you might want to go into in the future. So yeah, in a very informal way, I would say I wanted to sort of be a career counselor in that way, in whatever way I could for them.
Hey, Jason here with a special message for you to help and continue serving our beloved performing arts community. So here's what you can do. Share this with one person you believe with this episode can benefit and attach a personal note explaining why. This way, you are not only helping me grow this show, but also adding value to those you truly care about. Massive appreciation, as it means the world to me. And let's get right back to the show. Yeah, you know, before this episode, I was thinking a lot about the word career, right? And I actually looked it up on dictionary.com and it just goes as simple as this. An occupation or a profession, especially one requiring special training, followed as one's life work. So a lot of keywords within that, you know, you have occupation, you have profession, you have special training and then life work. And the reality of it is that career or profession, whichever way you like it, has become pretty much the bedrock of society and survival, right? We must have it. It's a natural course of action. So you already mentioned that you were doing a lot of that to some capacity. If I were to ask you this question, like if you really were a career guidance counselor by trade as well, which you could still be in the future and you're already doing already at this point, I see career as three different, let's say, segments, yeah? There's the career planning part. So before people actually go into universities to choose a particular you know, study. Then there's the career development part where you're within the industry, we got there, and then you're progressing as you go along. And then the last one is very much related to career crossroads, which is career transitions, where you have to fork out. Now, based on your existing experience, which of these three have been firstly the most enjoyable to talk about and hopefully the most challenging to talk about?
That's a good question. I think I have to go with the third one, crossroads and the career transition. And that's because that is the area of interest that I started with in my podcast. And for reference, the reason why I kind of got there was I started having my own sort of early life crisis where I was like, is this what I'm going to do for the rest of my life? I don't know. And I need to think about how I can branch out, because all of my practical experience comes from doing one particular type of job. And I was thinking, like, how can I transition from this into something else if that is what I choose to do? And when I talk to all these other people that I interview, those are the moments I'm focused on with them. And what you realize, what they sort of realize as I talk to them, and I'm curious to hear if this was your experience, is a lot of people, they think back to like when they were picking their initial career, what were the factors that went into it? And a lot of the times they can't even remember. It's something that's, because it's in the past, it's not as relevant to them, but because they currently or recently went through some sort of transition, it's much more centered in their memory. They remember it. They remember every specific reason why that happened. So that has become such an interesting thing for me. And I think maybe because I work with students, I see all these 18 to 22 year olds who, like, why are you studying this? What was your interest level in this? And they're like, oh, I saw this character in a movie and that looked like a cool job. Or their parents suggested it as a good option to study because there's good jobs at the end of the day. And I think there's a lot less thought into what your career will be like when you're 18 or 16 versus when you're 30 or 40 or pick a year. Once you've had some experience in the workforce and you start to really nail down on what are the things that, like, day to day practically in your job you enjoy, and is your current career trajectory going to line up with what those actual day to day things are? I think that's really where it starts to get interesting, because the more experience you have, the easier it is to nail down on that kind of thing.
Career itself is already such a complicated thing. And then to even think about the prospect of you having to change entirely, right? Like, I think that really freaks everyone out. Now, me personally, I did do that. I did do that myself. But I think, to be fair, I always wanted to become a dancer. So even though I had to study something else beforehand, you know, the dream was still to arrive at that particular point by hook or by crook. So I guess it's quite different from everyone else. But you also mentioned that, you know, throughout the podcast, you know, you've talked to many people, you learn a lot of things about how these people make those decisions in the first place. So just personally for you, like, what do you think are some of the most important elements? Yeah, like, everything in hindsight, we understand. But what are some of the most important elements when choosing a career?
Mm-hmm. So there's definitely some practical stuff, right? Like, are you going to be able to make a living for yourself financially? I think that's the thing that most people think about when they're young, or what their parents are trying to have them consider, is this something where you can make money to be able to have a good life? That is probably the most common question that gets asked. And then for me, I think the most important thing is, does it feel right? I very much feel with my gut. And if something feels like it's interesting or feels like the right path, it's worth exploring. And if something doesn't feel right, be wary. And maybe it's time to take a step back from that. There's something to be said for the resilience of being able to push through and get to the other side of something. But I also think that with the thousands, tens of thousands of career possibilities out there, why would you work towards something that you don't feel comfortable and happy with when there are so many other options out there that you could be comfortable or happy with? And more recently, I've been paying more attention to, there's a Japanese concept called ikagi. And ikagi, there's no direct translation to English from what I've seen, but the closest you can get to a translation is what is the thing that you live for or your purpose? And there's a really great Venn diagram that helps explain this. And it's, you take four different phrases: what you love, what the world needs, what you can be paid for, and what you're good at. And they all overlap like a Venn diagram. And in between each group and each pair of circles is a different word. And I found that they line up quite well. So between what you're good at and what you love, that's your passion. Between what you love and what the world needs, that's your mission. Between what the world needs and what you can get paid for is vocation. And what you can be paid for and what you're good at is your profession. But then the circle in the middle of all of these is ikagi, which is what is your purpose? And I've started to think more about this because on the one hand, it's great if you want to put something out there into the world and try and provide value for people. But if the world doesn't really need it, then it's not going to work out for you. You're not going to be able to have sustained success, I think. And I think this comes from thinking about my podcast and the future of it and, you know, realizing and hoping that there is the need for it that I believe that there is or that I've seen. And so far I've been lucky and I've kind of heard that there is. And, you know, what you love is a very complicated one because there are lots of things that people love that are just not career possibilities. There is no way to make money off those things. And so I think that is the thing that sometimes you have to sacrifice out of all of the concepts of ikagi to make a career for yourself. Because I also want to say, like, your career isn't your whole life. And if it lines up and you can make a career that fits beautifully into your life and makes you so happy, great, it can be your life, but it certainly does not have to be. And that's something I've realized over the last number of years, that it's okay to have a job where you go in the morning, punch in, do your work, do it well, punch out at the end of the day, and then go and live your life. It doesn't have to be that way, but if it does need to be that way, that's perfectly okay. And that was an interesting realization for me over the last number of years as I've been working and worked with people or had friends who clearly just a job is a job and it's not a whole lifestyle. So that's been something that I've found really important to consider over time when thinking about, is this the right career or right job for me or for anyone else?
I'm speaking with Jonathan Colleton. Prior to his current secondment as a residence life program coordinator, he was working as a campus life and special events coordinator for the University of Toronto, Scarborough. He is also a graduate of the Wilfrid Laurier University with a Bachelor of Arts majoring in Canadian History and Canadian Studies. Hey, Jason here with a special message for you to help and continue serving our beloved performing arts community. So here's what you can do. Share this with one person you believe who this episode can benefit and attach a personal note explaining why. This way, you are not only helping me grow this show, but also adding value to those you truly care about. Massive appreciation, as it means the world to me. And let's get right back to the show. I'm going to tell you something probably quite shocking, yeah? So, I love my job. I'm pretty good at it. I get paid for it. And I offer the world good value from it, yeah? So, hopefully it reaches quite close to ikagi. There are days where I just hate going to work. Not because of what I do, because it's more about the culture sometimes. So the culture often dictates, right, your livability, your functionality within any particular organization. I think we don't talk a lot about that when we choose careers. You don't just go into an office and do what you like or what you're good at. You have to listen to everybody else or work with other people. And that also, I think, is a huge factor in decision making for careers. But speaking of the world, because the world is important and, you know, the world feeds from you and you feed into it. Can you also name maybe one or two people or just think of some of the biggest influences for you personally in your decision-making, in your planning of your own career.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned before that when I went to this conference right before university started, there was a guy there who had a history degree, and then he was working in the Student Leadership Center there. And his name is Drew Patico. And Drew was the one that helped me realize very much that your degree is a degree and that it is important for you to have one in that. And this is something I took from what I saw, not something he said to me, but you know, I was at university to get a degree, and that was important because being there to get a degree is what allowed me the opportunity to participate in all of the extracurricular activities that gave me the skill sets to get me a job in the future. I have applied to many jobs over the year, and they all ask, what's your highest level of education? Not one of them has ever asked for proof that I actually went to university. So they don't want proof of a picture of a certificate, but they are asking situational questions that I can answer because of the skills I attained while I was earning that degree at the same time. And I don't know, maybe I would have been able to attain those same skills outside of a university setting. However, because I was there, everything was just immediately around me. It was so close to me. It was so easy to find those opportunities. And I think Drew, one, just being a guy with a degree that didn't line up with maybe the job he was doing, but in many senses, it kind of does because of what I've learned now. He definitely, just that moment of realizing that was huge in my development. And then I ended up going on to work with him for 3 years. He was my supervisor when I was a student leadership ambassador, where I ran workshops and ran training opportunities for students. So he was pretty big for that. And then there, you know, if I can only pick two, I'm going to go with Jeff Newell, who was he wasn't my first boss out of university. He was my second supervisor. I first had a 9-month contract at the University of Waterloo when I graduated. And there were so many people there that I learned from, that I, you know, I can't really pick one. That was my first real understanding of what it's like to work as a professional in a professional setting. I learned a lot of things there. And then when I moved over to Renison University College, I worked for Jeff, and he gave me a 3-year contract doing residence and student life programming. And he was someone who had a different background than a lot of the other people that I knew in the field of work that I was in. And he came from a rec and leisure degree. And so he was very important in showing me that just because I was a quote unquote professional, that didn't mean that the whole job had to be what might traditionally be considered professional all of the time, in that there is still a place for fun in the learning experience of students. And we would do, you know, all kinds of things, like just having a bonfire and making s'mores with our student staff and having them learn about one another by playing games was incredibly important in their development as a team, which then made them more effective over the course of the year. And so that kind of thing was really important. And I've tried to carry it on throughout the years with me as something that I just want to make sure I don't steer too far towards this is an academic learning opportunity. I don't work in academics. I don't want everything to feel clinical and like it has a very well-defined objective. I think that there is a place for things that are fun, but there also happens to be learning opportunities within them. And Jeff was definitely a part of that.
Wow, that's very interesting. So two people out of maybe 100 over thousands probably that have acted in some ways also as your guidance counselors, your career guidance counselors.
Absolutely.
I'm just curious, like this could still happen. I already mentioned this at the start of our conversation. If you were given the opportunity, right, to become, you know, a full-fledged career guidance counselor. Like, firstly, is that a favorable career for people to pursue an education in? Like you said, no one goes into an education thinking they want to be in a student affairs office, but I do believe in the benefits of it. But I think the more important question is, how exactly is it that beneficial as an education and potentially a profession?
I mean, if you think about the point of a career, one, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before with Ikagi and what are the important factors. So like, one, you need to make a living for yourself. You need to be able to make money. And university jobs, at least where I live in those types of roles, they pay well. There, you can make a living doing that. The money's okay. There's good pension, good benefits. So, and they're very stable. And so from a perspective of like, is this a good job? It would check that box. And then there's the other side of things where, do you feel fulfilled in what you're doing? And for someone like me who really enjoys working with students and seeing their development from 18 through 22 or whatever age they might come to us at, you know, the typical student's probably within that age range, but we have mature students who are much, much older, or sometimes at U of T we get students who are like 13 years old, child prodigies who come to us. Seeing student develop over time and seeing them come to either learn a new concept or realize or come to a realization about what they want is something that for me, I would find fulfilling. And so I would say working in a role like that, where I could impact a student's ability or impact their learning or impact their future direction, because they've now made a conscious choice to go in a certain direction, I would find that very fulfilling. And I would find that to be a job that would, I could come home at the end of the day and think I achieved something good today. And yeah, it might be something I pursue.
Hey everyone, if you're like me and prioritize online privacy and security, you're going to love NordVPN. Not only does NordVPN safeguard your internet connection and protect your personal data from hackers and snoopers, but it also offers an amazing advantage: seamless access to geo-blocked content on platforms like Netflix. With NordVPN, you can browse the web with peace of mind and enjoy your favorite shows and movies from anywhere in the world. Plus, their user-friendly interface makes it easy for anyone to stay protected online. And here's the best part. NordVPN offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it risk-free. Trust me, I've been using this for 2 years now, and it has totally changed my life. What's more, you can get the basic plan for as low as $5 a month. By signing up through the referral link below, you not only support your online peace of mind, but also help me and the continuity of this show. So, sign up for NordVPN today, and let's serve smarter and safer together.
I think it relates quite closely to maybe being an educator, right? Like, you don't need to deliver content necessarily. I mean, people can just go to Google and look up all this information, but they're looking for your input, your inspirational input, perhaps, that would probably tip the balance a little bit in any decision-making process and allow somebody to veer towards the right direction, per se. I think that's completely right. I do not know if there are a lot of career guidance counselors around the world. Is there more demand than there is supply? Is it the other way around? I'm not quite sure, but I do know that every university does have one, and every, even so let's say college, should have one. Even up to a point where of high school, I think that's, you know, when we're reaching sort of the critical age range where, you know, your mind is a little bit more chaotic and the sounds around you become more chaotic. Like, this is when you need it most, right?
I was just thinking, like, I don't know what the numbers are like in terms of, is there more demand than there is interest from the general population? What I can say is I definitely think there has been a rise over the last number of years of independent career coaches or counselors who, and I'm not trying to look down on these people in any way, but I think the rise of things like LinkedIn and sort of online influencers have led to a rise in people who want to do that sort of role independently on their own. And I don't know if traditionally it's ever been that way. I've always worked at institutions where we have I mentioned academic advising early on in this. Our academic advising department is tied to our career center, and we have a number of career counselors in that office. And every university I've ever worked at has that. So there's definitely been this online rise of people who, I think some of them are doing it sort of as a side hustle, and some of them are doing it full time. So I don't know about, you know, demand versus need, but I do think we're definitely in a time of transition, because for the last year and a half, as COVID has swept the world, the number of people who I think have made a conscious choice to maybe change careers because of what they've experienced during the pandemic has risen. And so I think right now there are a lot of people looking at career shifts, and there's probably a lot of use in having a career counselor work with you to help you through that process.
All right. Wow. That sits very nicely into my intended segue, which is, let's talk a little bit about career crossroads right now, because I find that an incredibly wonderful, incredibly useful platform of information and also inspiration. I know this is probably one of the hardest questions you get today, but if there was one way that the podcast and your experiences of interviewing all these different people, if there was one way that it has influenced or even changed the way that you look at careers in general, what would that be?
So I was thinking about this in advance and trying to think about I was just trying to think about the best way to answer the question. And what I have realized was, this was the first thing that I realized doing the podcast. And there have been a number of, you know, practical things. Like, now I know how to edit podcasts. I know how to edit audio. I know how to copyright. I know all these other skills I didn't have before. But it's not a practical thing that has been the most impactful thing when it comes to the creation of Career Crossroads. What I have found is that I'm not sure if it's the way I was raised, either by my parents, or if it was something I decided on my own from just what I saw in the world. But I used to always think that the stability of a 9-to-5 job is exactly what I wanted. I wanted that consistent paycheck every month. I wanted to go into work and feel good about my work, but ultimately leave and then know that I could set up a dinner with friends and not have to worry about that changing because I was done work at 5. I wanted to know that I could plan vacations and not worry about it getting moved around because as a business owner, I had to do something last minute. I always thought I wanted that stability. And what I have since come to realize while doing this podcast is that, you know, it's Sunday afternoon right now while we're doing this interview, for me anyway, it's evening for you. But I do all of this work at all these unusual hours, unusual in the context of 9-to-5 jobs. I do it in the evenings. I go and record with people, or mostly online recording right now, or I'll spend my whole Sunday editing my podcast. Like, once we get off this call, I have to spend probably 5 hours working on this week's episode. And, you know, sometimes it's somewhat bothersome that, like, wouldn't it be better to just, you know, sit on the couch all day and watch movies? But it's not like, it doesn't bother me so much that I couldn't see myself working these unusual hours long term if it allowed me to do something I was really going to be happy with for the rest of my life. And so, wrapping my head around the concept of, maybe I don't need a 9-to-5 job to be happy. Maybe I could work unusual hours, and if I was fulfilled with what I was doing, and as long as I'm making enough money, I don't have to be rich. I just need to make enough to enjoy my life. I could be happy with that. And that was definitely news to me. I did not expect that when I went into this process.
I think maybe that has to do a lot with the definition of career, right? Like, or profession, let's say. Like, what is required of you to even say you have a career or a profession? I think a lot of freelancers would be up and about sort of arguing that, like, yeah, we have a career too. It's just that it's not 9-to-5, you know, it's not stable. It's not set in stone. You know, you don't do punch in and punch out, but, you know, the benefits are overwhelmingly, you know, more, let's say, than maybe a 9-to-5, or at least equal. I don't know. But most of my friends are freelancers. Mm-hmm. And I can see that the enjoyment, fulfillment is there. And some of them even make more than, you know, actual 9-to-5 jobs. Some of them, and most of them actually enjoy the instability rather than stability of that particular career, which is quite strange, because I also had the same mentality that you had. And that is to get into a full-time job, which I am in right now. And, you know, I always say this to my friends. I have a full-time job, but I think like a freelancer. Because once I punch out of my work, I go straight home and I do all kinds of other stuff, you know, all these different projects that I would normally do if I was a freelancer. You know, so I believe something that has to be ingrained into us, I think at a much earlier age, is, you know, like you said, careers may not necessarily define your success as a person, as a survival mechanism. You know, it could be something that, and it's very prevalent here in Europe where people study things that they don't even want to use in the future, right? All of that has to do with, of course, free education and stuff like that. Okay, fine. I get it. Okay. So we talked a lot about how that has benefited, you know, your perception about careers. Okay. What's probably the most challenging thing about talking to people about careers then?
Oh, curveball. I do not have an immediate answer for that. The most challenging thing talking about to people about careers. I think it's probably going in, recognizing that you're never, there is no direct route. Like, I can't plan out one of my interviews and know it's going to go exactly this way, because everybody has such a unique story that I have to pivot and ask questions based on what I'm hearing from them. I can't just go in and say, like, here's the 10 questions we're going to talk through today. I could do it that way, but I guess I've chosen not to, and it's probably made it a little more difficult on myself, in that I've got to be very active in listening to what they're saying during the interviews. I realized that really, really early on, that if I space out for a minute and miss something, I'm in trouble because I don't know where to go next. And so really trying to focus on what this person is saying, what they went through in their career and how it's impacted them, and then find a way to dig deeper into that instead of just that surface level stuff, because I don't want to go just surface level. I want to know, you know, very specifically, like, what was the downside to doing things a certain way? Or just because they did something this way and it was successful, did that influence their relationships with anyone around them? You know, if they mentioned somebody early on who influenced them and then they pivot and do something else, like, did that influence that relationship? So all of these things affect our career. I said before that our career isn't our life, but it is something that we are involved in, like, at least for a third of our day, 5 days a week, for a lot of people. Some people much more, some people probably much less, but it is such a big component of your life that it does bleed into other aspects of your life. And, you know, a lot of people, their career is impacted by their family. And if their family, they might want to get a certain promotion, but that might require moving across the country or to another country, and they might not want to move their family, because it's that I've had that conversation with a few people, and that realization, because that's not something that would have impacted me up to this point in my career, like, that's a whole new thing for me, and I have to be able to understand what they're talking about and try to dig deeper into it, even though it's not my own experience.
Hey, have you ever wondered what creativity truly means? Well, you should. Creativity is in everyone's hands, which means you don't have to be a genius to be creative. Yes, everyone has a certain level of creative capacity that just needs that bit of guidance to fulfill its truest potential. So hop on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and give The Creative Club, hosted by Tony Lee, a listen to. She talks to a whole host of artists and creatives about different creative processes, such as logo designing, dancing, and even inventing apps. Anything about creativity, she has the lot. And once you're over there, tell her that Jason sent you. I'm sure she would really appreciate it.
Okay, I have another off-script question for you, you know, like the previous one.
Go for it.
And this is also very much inspired by Career Crossroads, which is, I just love the catalog of people. Yeah. And you've mentioned this already many times, that you can get value from almost anything if you are proactive in your intentions. So almost everyone in that list, on your guest list, safely said, isn't some sort of celebrity, some sort of superstar, right? Mm. But everyone has such a unique point, such a unique stance, such a unique origin that you can just derive so much value out of. Now, if you ever had the opportunity to interview a quote unquote celebrity, how do you think that would be different
just based on your imagination?
That's a good question, because I have had somebody who I've connected with who offered to set me up with an actor who they know, who they know from a local theater company, but this person has been in a number of TV shows. And I've had to think a lot about that. Like, how would that conversation go? And I think the important thing is for me to realize that not everybody is a perfect candidate for my podcast. You know, I've had people ask me to be interviewed, and I am the only one who can impact the direction of that show from a sort of creative direction, the type of content we're going to give out. I have to recognize by getting a summary of someone's life story whether or not they're a good fit. And if they're not a good fit, I would have to turn them down. If somebody has, you know, they graduated university and then they were in the same field of work for 18 years and never thought about changing that work, that's not going to make an interesting story. And that doesn't go to the point of what I'm trying to achieve by helping people recognize that you can make pivots all throughout your life. And that even though you made this choice, you might have been planning on something else prior to that. So I think there would be a lot of pre-work to make sure that any sort of celebrity was a good fit for the show. There are a few people that I'm lucky enough to have people who can put me in contact with, and I plan on getting in touch with to try and interview, who have quite an online following, but I already know that they've made a number of interesting pivots in their life, and they are already good storytellers, and I think they would be good fits without having to talk more to them already. So yeah, I wonder how all other podcasts feel about this too, or podcasters, about, you know, making the choice to talk to someone or not to talk to someone. Because it was hard for me to sort of make that call early on, that it's so exciting when people start reaching out and they're like, hey, I want to be on your show. And then I started to realize that there are a bunch of podcast agents out there booking their clients, and they're using cut and paste emails. And the first time I got an email that said, hey, we listened to your episode titled blank, 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 and it wasn't even my own episode. And I realized they're just spamming everybody with the same email. Like, they might not be a good fit for my podcast. They just want to get out there and sell their thing, but they probably don't even listen to mine. They don't even know what it's about, and they're not sure that they're going to be a good fit. They just want to sell something. So that's been a fun challenge to try and wade through some of those to pick out the gems.
All right. So speaking of gems, I think the Career Crossroads podcast is a personal gem for you and for many people listening to it. How do you envision that to grow? How do you envision polishing that gem heading into the future? What is it going to be like?
Yeah. So I recognized pretty early on that I really enjoy doing this. I really enjoy the work related to the podcast. And like I said, not every day is a fun day, but not every day is a fun day at most jobs. So if I can find a way to do things related to the podcast and make a living off doing that, I would be thrilled to find a way to do that. The job I'm in now, Res Life Program Coordinator, is a one-year contract, and I'm very lucky and privileged in that it's what we call a secondment at the university. So I have my old job to go back to in a year. They just hire someone to cover me for a year while I go try out something new. Great opportunity. And so when this showed up, I negotiated with our residence department and said, I would like to do this job, but I would like to do it only 4 days a week. And we came to an arrangement that once we hit the end of September, I'm going to drop down to 4 days a week so that I have more time to work on the podcast and continue to build that up. And at the end of the 8 or 9 months of me doing that, we'll see where I'm at. But in the meantime, you know, I'm thinking about, what do I see myself doing when I'm 40 or 50? And is the trajectory I'm on in student affairs, is there a trajectory at all for that matter? And I'm just not sure. And when I look at the podcast, I think I can think for sure of what I would be doing at 40 or 50 with that type of work. So, you know, it fits. When we were talking about Ikagi, I think it fits three of the categories. The fourth one I have to figure out is, can I get paid for it? And I had someone reach out yesterday to ask, like, do you have a donation page? So that's great. That's the beginning of something, I think. And I'm going to spend as much time and effort as I can trying to continue to build this up. because I'm seeing a need for it. Even if it's not the biggest need in the world, I think I've gotten enough good feedback and from luckily some people in career centers at universities that this is something that they value and they've started to recommend to students. And that for me is huge because that shows me that the professionals who work in the area of interest that my podcast is related to find value in what I'm doing. So if I can find a way to make that a career, I absolutely would. And I think I'm lucky that I'm at this point in my life where I can afford to take a risk like that and drop down my work hours in order to spend more time on a passion project that maybe can become something one day. And it's going to allow me to work on some of the other concepts related to the podcast. You know, I know that not everybody listens to podcasts, but I think there is value in the interviews I've done. And if I could turn that into a book where I talk through the stories of people who've made career changes, I think that could be really valuable for people. And I have a concept for a card deck that could be used as a learning tool for students in high schools and universities. I'm thinking back to in Ontario in Canada, we have a careers class in high school. And I think if these teachers had a resource, and they do have resources, but this particular thing that I'm envisioning would be a great way for them to start the discussion at the beginning of every class by talking through the story of someone I've spoken to and the challenge they faced and how they overcame that challenge along their career path. So if I can have time to work on a concept like that, and ultimately, if the podcast could lead to me being able to go in and speak to high school and university students about my own experience and how important the time I spent participating in things outside of my academics were in my own experience and the people I've talked to, how important the realization that they didn't have to stay doing what they had planned to do was in their own journey, I would love to do that. I've spent years doing presentations to students for training workshops at the university. And if I can find a way to make a long-term career out of interviewing people and offering value to students, that would be the ultimate dream for me.
Well, I absolutely adore that. I remember in our previous conversation on your show, I mentioned that podcasting is very much an entrepreneurial act. And I think I could already see that with you right now, already branching out into potential avenues as to how this podcast can, you know, continue providing value for people. And I just hope that I will be in some ways connected to that branch in some shape, form, or way. That would be really exciting. We'll see about that. Let's wrap things up a little bit. And I always end my shows with a couple of very experimental questions that I want to get a little bit more out of my guest. Yeah. So let's take everything away from the job perspective. Let's put the career aside. Sure. And I'm going to direct this, you know, very personally to you deep down. You mentioned a little bit about being 40, being 50. So if there was one thing that you could choose, if there was one thing that you would love for people to say or think about you when you have finally retired, what would that be?
I think if people could say that I was able to help others, I think that would be the thing that I would be really happy about. I've definitely had points in my life where I felt very selfish and like all I was doing was trying to help myself. And I think I think most people go through periods like that. And it's just made me realize like how much we change over time. And I've sort of hit this new point where I have learned to help myself and understand what is important to me. And part of that is helping others. So if I can achieve that when I'm 50 or retired, that would be fantastic.
Lovely. Lovely. All right. Final question, Jonathan. You ready for this?
Absolutely. So,
once again, scan through your entire archive of memories. I would love you to just pick one for the sake of time. What was probably your proudest achievement so far as a person or even as a professional?
I think, it goes back to before I even started my career, but I think it was the moment where I recognized that I definitely had a future doing what I am doing right now. And somebody who I didn't mention before, who was a really big influence on me, was someone named Leanne Holland Brown. And Leanne Holland Brown. I think I missaid her last name there. And Leanne was someone who, she was the manager of the Student Leadership Center for a time when I worked there. And she hired me in a summer job one time to work on prepping for the following year, prepping things like the Alternative Reading Week program and workshop content. And Leanne tragically was passed away in a car accident a few years ago. But Leanne became the dean of students at Laurier, where I was a student. And the summer that I was working for her, I was in the midst of realizing or working towards becoming, getting myself ready to try and get a career in student affairs. I think it was the summer after between my third and fourth year. And I got an opportunity to become a residence advisor at the university. We call them dons, residence dons, but residence advisor is the more widely used term. And those are the senior staff who live in residence with first year students and try to help them through their experience in university. And I had not applied for that role, but my name had come up in conversations when some people had dropped out of the hiring process, or it was actually already during training. This was right at the end of the summer. And my name had been recommended by Sheldon Pereira, who was my old residence advisor, residence don, who I actually just interviewed on my podcast. And when I was in the office and I got this email and I was like, okay, I knew I wanted to be a residence don, but I thought I was going to do it in my fifth year because I knew all along I was going to be doing it in my fifth year. Or that I would be doing a fifth year, I should say. And as I was reading this email, I was like, what do I do? Like this, I had to make a decision very quick, whether or not I was interested. And if I was, I was going to do the interview like the next day or that day or something. And I remember Leanne giving me some advice, and it was, I recall it was definitely one of the things that sort of put me on the path I'm on today, which was, she said, Jonathan, if you do this job as a residence don, you will be one of the most well-rounded students in terms of student experience that I've seen in my time at Laurier. And she was someone I really looked up to. So hearing that from her meant a lot because it told me that what I was doing was the right thing to do and that I should take this job and that that would lead probably, as long as I worked hard at it, to a career in student affairs one day. And here I am, you know, 8.5 or I don't know when that conversation was, 2010 or 2011 or something like that. But since I graduated, I've now been in the field of work for, I think, 8.5 years. And I think back to that conversation sometimes, because if I hadn't achieved what I had achieved up to that point in time, maybe she never would have said that to me. And maybe I wouldn't be in student affairs right now. So that is definitely one of my prouder moments.
Wow. Hey, nothing left to say. I just want to end this with a huge gratitude. Yeah. Appreciation for, you know, your honesty, your practicality, your intelligence and your humility, man. Like, I think, you know, spaced out a couple of moments when you were speaking because I started to wonder, that's me. You know, that's me. That's exactly, you're talking about me. I have to make a decision in my own life right now and many other junctures to come. So once again, Jonathan, huge pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the Background Doctor.
Jason, thanks for giving me the opportunity. It was a pleasure.
Jonathan Colleton has been my guest today. He is the current Residence Life Program Coordinator and Campus Life and Special Events Coordinator at the University of Toronto Scarborough. He is also the host, editor, and producer of the Career Crossroads podcast. For materials regarding this episode, do visit backgrounddancer.com/S1E23. That's episode 23. And 2Ds for Background Dancer. Now, the month of August will be slightly special as I will only be releasing two episodes. Well, since it's also going to be the only time I can ever take a break during the summer vacation, so I wanted to maybe cool down a little bit. And the next episode is quite interesting because that's the one that I recorded when featured as a guest artist at the Soulfest Virtual Arts Festival 2021 that was held during mid-June. So that was also the first time I did a podcast episode with three other people. And it's basically a roundtable discussion about some of the most important things regarding dance itself. So it's still considered bonus content as it would not be part of some of the major categories that I will be discussing on the show. So stay tuned for that. That is something that you definitely don't want to miss. And once again, thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. I will see you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe, comment, and leave a review on your designated podcast and social media platforms. If you found this interesting or helpful, feel free to share with members of your community so that they too may connect with us in our quest to foreground dance in the background. I am Jason Yup of The Background Dancer, and as always, catch you next time. Calling all dance educators and leaders, whether it's through a professional development weekend, day, or workshop, Lauren Ritchie is passionate about connecting with fellow educators who are in the trenches, pouring their hearts into their work with unwavering dedication. From navigating stress and perfectionism to fostering confidence and resilience in dancers, Lauren provides invaluable guidance on supporting students through every step of their journey. Because, let's face it, our work changes lives, and it's most impactful when teachers embrace, communicate, and practice mental skills themselves. Join her online teacher workshops and education sessions, where you explore topics like understanding the brain stages of your students, enhancing motivation, effective feedback strategies, preparing for competition, and fostering team cohesion. Ready to transform your teaching approach and empower your students like never before? Reach out today to learn more at www.withlauren.ca/teacher-workshops or click the link in the show notes below.